Dr. Morning is an associate professor of sociology at New York University and a faculty affiliate of New York University Abu Dhabi. Her research interests include race, demography, and the sociology of science, especially with respect to census classification worldwide and individuals' concepts of racial difference. Dr. Morning is the author of The Nature of Race, How Scientists Think and Teach About Human Difference, published in 2011 by the University of California Press. Okay, thank you so much, Judy, for the introduction, and thanks to all of you for being here this afternoon. Today, I'd like to talk to you about my research on how people learn about the nature of race through formal education. So in a sense we learn in the classroom about race. Now I understand for this conference I have to show you that I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. And with that I'll move on to discuss the focus of my research. So I'll be talking today about my study of how textbooks convey ideas to young people about what race is and about the differences between races. Now, I choose to focus on textbooks, and in particular, I'll be talking about high school textbooks, because textbooks have the aura, they have the reputation of containing truths, right? Of containing agreed upon knowledge that scientists across the spectrum agree on. So it's supposed to be uncontroversial, and widely agreed upon knowledge. Now, at the same time, textbooks are also interesting to look at because as much as they may seem to merely convey accepted scientific knowledge to us, they're also very social documents. They are the product not just of scientists writing and thinking about race, but they're also a process of political and social deliberation, or a product of that kind of deliberation. And I have an image here where none of us are really going to be able to read the legends on this diagram, but what I'm showing you here is kind of an illustration from one author of how textbooks get put together in the United States and really what goes into producing a textbook. So as much as we might like to think that textbooks are simply conveying scientific knowledge, in fact, there are public hearings that determine the content, there are marketing departments in publishing companies that have an impact on what gets packaged into the textbook. So that makes textbooks interesting, not just because they are sold to the student as containing factual, uncontested knowledge, and in this case we'll see what they present as uncontested knowledge about race, but because at the same time we also see the fingerprints of our society and our culture on those ideas. Now, in this talk, I'm going to be asking the question, exactly what concepts of race get conveyed in American textbooks, and in particular in biology textbooks? Now, when I talk about concepts, I'm talking about, on one hand we could say definitions, but also something a little bit broader than that, really working models of what race is, of the nature of race. So, you know, what races are there? What are the characteristics of distinct races? How do we know who belongs to one race or another? And what kinds of markers in general do we think distinguish one race from another? All of those, that's kind of a bundle of ideas or that form a working model about what race is as a concept, and that is what I'll be referring to when I talk about racial conceptualization in this talk. Now, as Judy mentioned, this work comes out of a book that I published in 2011, The Nature of Race. And in that book, in exploring how Americans think about race and how scientists shape what we think about race, I was particularly interested in two kinds of concepts, and so I'll be coming back to them in my talk today. That is, I'm particularly interested in what I call the biological concept of race, or sometimes the essentialist concept of race, so the belief that what races are simply biologically determined and demarcated entities, groupings of human beings, versus the constructivist notion of race, the idea that what races really are socially invented groupings. So the boundaries between races are lines that we draw up, that we invent, and they don't stem from actual patterns of human biological variation in our species. Now, to say something about the sample of textbooks that I will be talking to you about, I compiled a sample of 80 textbooks of biology developed for use in American high schools and published from the 1950s until the very first years of the 21st century. So I'm really going to span several decades and draw on that historical trajectory in my comments. Now, the first finding that I want to share with you is that it became clear to me pretty early on in my analysis that we could discern three kinds of discussion about race in biology textbooks. The first, which I call direct discussions, are basically the passages in textbooks where the authors are trying explicitly to teach students something about race. So in a sense, these are the passages in the book where the lesson is about race. They might be chapter sections with titles like The Races of Man, you know, or The Stocks of Mankind, if we go back a little further in time. And these direct discussions of race tend to be made up of three components. One are explicit definitions of race, so races are or race is, those kinds of statements. Then there are the passages that I call characterizations of race, where the authors try to describe races to students. So there are five races. They are race X, Y, and Z. They have these characteristics. This is what distinguishes one race from another. Those passages in direct discussions are what I'm calling characterizations of race. And then finally, also part of these explicit lessons about race is the accounting for races. So the passages in textbooks where they try to explain to students why they're races. How is it that races emerge? Now, in addition to these direct discussions of race, there are also what I call indirect passages about race, where the focus is not on race, but race gets kind of inserted, we could say, through the back door in discussions. So to give you an example, a textbook passage on Linnaean nomenclature, which talks about Linnaeus' systems for naming, may mention that Linnaeus also came up with formal labels for different races. There, the focus is not on race, the focus is on Linnaean nomenclature, but race gets inserted into the discussion. So I pay attention to passages like that. Finally, there are also passages in the textbooks which I call implicit discussions of race. And these are interesting passages where race is certainly not the object of the discussion, and it's not even explicitly mentioned, but we can imagine that these passages they convey a message about race. And I'm going to give you an example of one of those implicit discussions of race right now. So invariably, I found in textbooks, when authors try to visualize for us evolution from pre-hominid forms to current Homo sapiens sapiens, interestingly enough, the final stage of that evolutionary process is always a white man. I have yet to see a depiction where an Asian woman is the end point of this product, or a black man, or anybody else. It's fairly safe to say it's a commonly observed rule in these messages that when we talk about evolution, a white male is the end product of that process. And although race is not mentioned explicitly here, I think it's fair to say that there's a message, a racial message, that is conveyed to us, either about kind of what represents the apex of development, of hominid development, or simply what is normal, kind of what is the default human. It's a white man. Having said that, in this talk, I'm actually not going to talk further about implicit discussions about race. So this is an illustration, but I'm now going to turn to focusing on my results on direct discussion of race and indirect discussion of race. But we can talk more about implicit messages if we like in the Q&A. All right, so I'll talk first about direct discussions of race. Let me skip forward a bit. Which again are passages where the textbooks aim explicitly to teach students something about the nature of race. Now, what I found in my study was that these kind of direct lessons about race were very commonplace in American biological textbooks in the 50s and 60s. But gradually over time, that attention, that focused attention to race has really petered out, with something of an apparent uptick, or at least stabilization, in recent years. And I'm going to talk a little bit about sort of what contributes to that return of or stabilization in engaging with race. Now, the first component of direct discussions of race, so direct lessons about race that I mentioned, were definitions of race. And here I'm giving you two examples of formal definitions of race that appeared in textbooks published 40 years apart. And I'll just talk a little bit about how each is typical of its era. So in the first case, we have the definition that a race is composed of people who tend to have certain inborn physical characters in common. Now, at that time, the phrase inborn physical characters would very much have conjured up for the readers surface phenotypical differences. The focus on textbooks at this time was very much in teaching about races as collections of people who shared similar skin color, hair texture, eye color, whatever it might be, but surface somatic characteristics. The focus also was on linking race to human beings, to people. When we get to the definitions at the end of the 20th century, rather, we get a language about race, definitions about race, which are more explicitly about genetic difference, so not necessarily its surface manifestations in terms of our physical phenotype, but the idea that we know races by their genetic signature, not by their outward characteristics. And also kind of an enlargement or universalization of the race concept to extend it beyond human beings, to make the claim that race is a kind of universal phenomenon that we observe in all living creatures, so that we can talk about races of apple trees or honeybees or anything. Okay? In a sense, it naturalizes the race concept as a biological phenomenon by stressing that race is just something that we would find in any breed, so to speak, of living creatures. The most frequent component, though, of direct racial discussions over time in textbooks, have been what I call characterizations of race. So these traditionally have been really very lengthy and detailed and vividly illustrated passages in textbooks which try to teach students what races are, which races there are in the world, what they're like, how we can distinguish races from each other. And I'm giving you two early examples here before I give you a more recent one. So these two examples from textbooks from the 1950s, although I realize you can't read the text, I'll give you a sense of what they're capturing. So on the left, first of all, we have a visual taxonomy of the races. This was very typical. This has been very typical in American textbooks of the 20th century, particularly mid-century. And it has a lot of hallmarks of the taxonomies, the visual taxonomies of its era. For one thing, at this time in the 1950s, there were a lot of races, right? I mean, there are 10 races right here. The races are clearly arrayed in a hierarchical order, right? There's no pussyfooting around here, right? We have whites on top, we have Asians in the middle, we have blacks on the bottom, or Ethiopians, as they're called here, Caucasians, Mongolians, and Ethiopians. Also, there's the idea that we recognize races not just by their phenotypical characteristics, but even their dress. So all of their cultural accoutrements, their dress, their apparel, their jewelry, is also part of how we recognize the races. Again, that was very common. In the image on the right that you're seeing us, a bunch of illustrations of drawings of the different races, you can't read it, but the bottom has a caption. It's a quiz. It's a quiz question where students are asked, to which of the primary stocks do you think each of these persons belong? So to which of the races does each of this person belong? Each of these people belong? And we can see students are not supposed to base that judgment just on the physical characteristics of people, but their dress, their environment, their setting, their activities are all of the supposedly the ingredients that we need to know about in order to correctly place a person in their racial category. In the middle, very briefly, is also a kind of chart that was pretty common. So, you know, it's kind of like a cheat sheet for knowing your races. So it's a table which tells you, it characterizes the races in terms of their hair, their skin, their eyes, their stature, their head shape, and their lips. So, you know, you could really prepare for your quizzes this way. You would really have all the information you needed to go into the classroom with to be able to correctly distinguish the 10 races of man. Now, let's flash forward to 1998. First of all, it's worth saying that these kinds of visual depictions of race have really fallen by the wayside over the course of the 20th century. So this is actually a somewhat rare depiction in textbooks today. That is, to find a visual taxonomy of race is not as much of a given as it used to be. But this example is interesting because it shows a progression, a change over time in lots of the dimensions of what I pointed to earlier. So for one thing, there are a lot fewer races today than there used to be, it would seem, in the United States. There are only 4 races now, apparently. Although it's not exactly clear because the language has also become so ambiguous that we don't even know if these are all of the races of mankind anymore or just a subset. The caption just tells us that some of the different racial groups are represented by these people. So it's left to our imagination to figure out what the comprehensive listing of races would be. I think also that perhaps something has changed here is that I suspect that the editors are trying to introduce a Hispanic race. It's hard to say because these races are not labeled. Again, there's less information than we used to get. And also note that in this depiction, the races are all arrayed on an equal footing, so we don't have that vertical hierarchy that we used to have. And we also don't have the reliance on details of dress and behavior and all of that that we used to have to be able to know the races. The idea today is that we shouldn't need to know any of that. We can just look at a person, we can just look them in the face and know their race. Although, again, I'm not exactly sure which races the editors meant to convey here. So over time, there's a loss of detail. The textbooks are less willing, let's say, to go out on a limb and go into detail in specifying what the races are, which they are, what their labels are, what are the things that distinguish them. So there is a real loss of information vis-a-vis the earlier depictions. Okay. Now, another area, this moving into indirect discussions of race, an area of discussion about race that has increased in the textbooks, in contrast to the visual taxonomies and the definitions, have been passages that connect race to genetic disease, and now that's pretty much ubiquitous. Now, I call this an indirect kind of discussion because usually race gets inserted into a discussion about genetic disorders, so race is not the main topic, but it figures in it, it's mentioned. And this example that I'm showing you is a chart of various genetic disorders, including sickle cell anemia, Tay-Sachs disease, and cystic fibrosis, for starters. And what's notable here is that each of these diseases gets linked to a particular racial label. Right? Now, we're not given a lot of background information to know to what extent these disorders are found outside those racial groupings. For example, we don't get any discussion that lets us know that sickle cell anemia is not unique to people of African descent. Instead, these kinds of categorizations tend to reinforce this idea that disease generally corresponds or maps onto racial borders. The last area of or content in the textbooks that I want to talk about has to do with the textbooks' accounts of the origins of race or their accounts for races. And I'm just showing an example here from the 1980s of one textbook story to its students of where races came from. So here there's a story that different races originated or descended from various pre-human ancestors and evolved separately in different parts of the world. So this is an example of one textbook's lesson about where races come from. Now, these kinds of accounts in textbooks also used to be very popular, also tended to drop precipitously, but really are making a comeback. And the reason that they are making a comeback in textbooks is in large part because of textbooks' willingness to espouse or to convey the multi-regional hypothesis of racial origins. Now, as you know, kind of the commonly accepted scientific premise these days is that all human beings alive today descend from a relatively small group of African ancestors. However, there is a competing theory to that, a kind of a polygenetic theory that's been floating around in different versions for decades, which we can call the multi-regional hypothesis, and actually gets airtime in textbooks today, in a lot of textbooks today, which is surprising considering that it really runs against the grain of what, you know, scientists are pretty much in agreement on. Now, the multi-regional hypothesis claims that, in fact, we don't all descend from African ancestors. Only black people descend from African ancestors. Everybody else descends from other groups of pre-human ancestors that separately evolved to Homo sapiens sapiens status in their own homeland corner of the world. Okay. Now, this is a real puzzle. Why are so many textbooks, because we're talking about 3/4 of the textbooks that espouse this theory in one way or another, whether they label it as a theory about race or not. Why do they teach this when it runs so strongly against the grain of what, you know, most scientists would say today? And I want to suggest here that we can understand it by thinking about the ways in which controversy around evolutionary theory gets handled. So in my interviews, part of my research has also involved interviews with undergraduate students about what they learn about race on campus. And one of the things that I often heard students say about evolutionary theory was that they didn't buy it because they couldn't stand to think that we human beings were related to monkeys, that, you know, as they would put it. How could you, you know, I don't buy that. And I think that the multi-regional hypothesis about race is an answer in textbooks. It's an answer for students who don't want to believe that white people can be descended from blacks, that white people can be related from blacks, be related to blacks. Because the multi-regional hypothesis says, you know, disregard the out-of-Africa origin story that scientists tell you. Here's an alternative view where whites have white ancestors, blacks had black ancestors. You know, we've always been separate races within the human species. And I think that that is very much what has driven the rise of this teaching about the multi-regional hypothesis. Now, Judy, how am I for time? Do I have any left? Okay, I'm going to close then simply with just a summary slide that I just want to reinforce that from my findings then, it's clear to me that textbooks no longer make the efforts that they used to teach about race. And yet, as much as they've retrenched their discussions of race over time, they still manage to convey to students the idea that race is grounded in biological difference. They define race as genetic, they talk about the multi-regional hypothesis, and they connect genetic disorders to race in a very superficial way. So as a result, I think it's quite fair to say that textbooks today continue to reinforce long-standing biologically essentialist notions of race. So I'll close there. Thank you for your patience.